Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
What's going on, everybody? Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd here for On the Double, show 75.
Show 75, I believe, Sean, that is Diamond. Am I correct? Diamond. The Diamond Celebration, number 75. We have to look that up. 75 years means the Diamond Celebration. This should be an awesome, awesome show, man.
Well, I believe gold is 50, so you might be right on there with diamond at 75.
That's some good stuff, man. We're moving right along with shows and great guests, but you know, we can kind of go and lament on that a little bit later, man. What's on tap for today?
Well, Sean, as always, big-time guest times two tonight. Jared Lewis straight out of the gate. In about 5 to 10 minutes, Jared Lewis out of the Bend, Oregon area. The main man for the Harlem Globetrotters public address announcer getting started with the Globetrotters on their tour in December should be great.
Man, the Harlem Globetrotters, when I think of that, you know, I think back of my childhood. And, of course, everybody will say that because the Harlem Globetrotters have been around for such a long time. But brings such great joy, and for Jared Lewis to actually have a position like that, being the PA announcer, has to be some exciting stuff.
And big-time guest number two, a good friend of the program who has been on a few times, coming back is Paul Gackle of GackleReport.com to try and iron everything out Bay Area.
Man, so I love having Paul on the show. Well, as you're saying, you know, bringing the Bay Area to the forefront. And of course, there's some exciting things that are going on this weekend. And of course, yesterday in the NFL, not so good for the Bay Area. But on the baseball side, the San Francisco Giants starting game number one tomorrow for in the World Series against the Kansas City Royals. I'm sure Paul will have some great things to say about that.
Yeah, it was definitely a downer in the Bay for the teams in the NFL yesterday, and the Pacific Northwest did not fare any better. Losses all across the board.
Whoa, so where do we start, man? I can tell you on my end, being in Oakland yesterday, and, you know, it was a, you know, kind of a mix of emotions, if you will. Of course, the Raiders coming out and getting a chance to play against the NFC West leading Arizona Cardinals. And, of course, this is week number two with Tony Sparano as the head coach. And, you know, what the Raider fans were looking for is some improvement. And, you know, to be honest with you, I think, you know, it was a little bit of a push. We saw some good things yesterday. But then again, you know, the ugly things reared its head. And, of course, you know, Sean, I want to take some time out here to actually reflect on, you know, one of the fallen. And what I mean by that, one of our great, great fans passed away. One of the top Raider fans. He's known as the Oaktown Pirate. And that is Azel Gatsy. I'm sorry. Passed away this past week. And, of course, 2 weeks ago he was at the game. And, you know, this past week he was gone. And so I just want to reflect out to the Raider Nation that we've lost a great one. And, you know, heartfelt goes out to his family.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he was a great, great fan of the team, and it's just a shame when things like that happen, and, you know, his memory will carry on.
Yes, and of course, you know, there are many Raider fans, Raider faithful, that I get a chance to be around, and, you know, it is. They become family. And so I know for all of the NFL and the world on the outside looking in, you know, it looks like just a strange group of characters. And I think that's just the way we want it in the Raider Nation. And so, but these guys are definitely a class act. They know exactly about sports. They know you know, what they want in their teams. And so I do. I take a great pride in getting a chance to talk with these gentlemen, especially in the Black Hole. And so another shout out to Dr. Death. I know, Dr. Death, you're probably listening tonight. You know, and again, it's great talking with you about some of the stadium issues and talking about some of the great past that of Raiders victories as well. And so, of course, Dr. Death lives in Sacramento as well. And so, again, you know, a tip off the hat to Dr. Death.
Now, Sean, of course, you're talking Raiders, and you were at the game once again, working this time for Fox, the Cardinals, and the Raiders. How'd that go for you?
Well, again, you know, it looked like the Raiders were, you know, they're competing. Right now they're competing, and it just seems like, you know, one of the things that Coach Sperano's talked about in the press conferences is the guys just don't know how to win. And you think about that, and you're like, wow, like, you know, can that be true? But when you've lost 12 in a row, gosh, I can't even believe I'm saying that. When you've lost 12 in a row like the Oakland Raiders have, you know, at some point you do lose that ire. There have been a lot of changes in the offseason. There have been some things in the Raiders organization that, you know, are in the developing phases. But, you know, yesterday the Raiders came out, played tough, made some key mistakes, you know, at inopportune times. And, you know, the game just got away from them. Of course, Carson Palmer coming back and getting a chance to play against his former team. Jared Valdir, who left in the offseason, looked pretty good. And, of course, Tommy Kelly, for the Raider Nation who remembers Tommy Kelly, defensive tackle, had a pretty decent game as well. So, you know, a lot of former Raiders coming back and getting a chance to play against their team. And, you know, I just think that, again, it's a matter of time. Even though the Raiders are losing games, it's just a matter of time before they right the ship. It just hurts right now. It hurts right now. With every waking loss that comes upon us, it just hurts more and more. But I do see a silver lining here at the end of the tunnel.
So it seemed like for the Raiders, the game last week against the Chargers was a positive and a step in the right direction. What would you say this game on Sunday with the Cardinals was?
Gosh, I'd say one step forward and two steps back. You know, they showed some signs again of playing well. Of course, Derek Carr is the real deal. And for those who are wondering, you know, hey, what kind of quarterback he is, was that the right choice? This was an excellent choice. And one of the things I do want to take the time out with Sean Wally, you know, and talking to the Raider Nation and the Raider faithful, you know, we get on, we're very passionate fans. And sometimes we say things that, you know, sometimes they make a lot of sense and sometimes it's just out of frustration and anger. And right now there are a lot of echoes as far as how bad Reggie McKenzie is as far as making his picks. It's easy for us to pick the bad things. It's easy for us to show, well, hey, you know, DJ Hayden's not playing. You know, well, you know, that's not Reggie McKenzie's fault. You know, the young man's injured. But, you know, hey, DJ Hayden's not playing. Get rid of Reggie McKenzie. He's made bad move after bad move. But a lot of these young men who Reggie McKenzie has picked are actually, for one, starting, and one, Derek Carr is one, and this gentleman is probably the premier quarterback, or he will be one of the premier quarterbacks in the NFL in the coming years. They just need to build around him. And so, you know, it's frustrating. It's very frustrating to see the losses compiled, but I think that these guys are definitely going to get better.
We'll have more time later in the hour to talk the weekend of football, but let's go out now to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in Jared Lewis, public address extraordinaire. Jared, how are you?
I'm doing good, man. How are you guys doing?
Great, Jared. Hey, man, I'm so excited for you. You know, for one, you know, you are embarking on what would be considered a dream job, and I know that you probably consider it that. You know, being the PA announcer for the Harlem Globetrotters, I mean, you know, man, I want you to just open up and just tell us what the preparation is like. What is it like being around that style of an organization?
Boy, I tell you, it's like you said, it is a dream come true. It's a hoops dream come true. And the organization is absolutely amazing. There's a mix of, you know, this intensity of stepping up to this level. You know, anytime you move up to that level of professional athletics, and these guys are amazing athletes, everything picks up in intensity and picks up in speed. So there's a little bit of an adjustment there, but there's also kind of that sense of every time I walk in the room, I'm very aware of the brand that I'm a part of. And you know some of the names that come with that. So there's this definite sense of wanting to honor that, you know, and also realizing that when I step out there in a very, very small way, I represent and further some names, you know, like Curly Neal and Sweet Lou and Goose Tatum. And it's just overwhelming. It's a huge, huge honor.
Now, Jared, tell us now, you had a boot camp, a 2-week boot camp in New York on Long Island. Did you anticipate, you know, the grandeur that was put together, you know, as far as preparing to be a Harlem Globetrotter PA announcer? You know, tell us what that 2-week boot camp was like.
Boy, I tell you, it was intense and also very, very funny, obviously. There's a ton to learn, not just about the basketball side of it, the announcing that you have to do, but you know, we had to take class at night. We had history class where former players would teach us about the organization, about what we represent, and you know, there's so much thrown at you that you really just have to get in and go. It's trial by fire. A ton to learn, but also the guys in the organization are, it's just a family, and they're very, very encouraging. The coaches are former players, the current players. They want you to succeed, so they have this great way of being able to make you laugh and kind of relieve the pressure. They're encouraging you. Even times where maybe you screw up a little bit as an announcer and you know, they just kind of wink at you, and then they know that you messed up and encourage you to keep going, and they keep telling you, hey, you're going to do great, just keep it up. And it's just a great group of guys to be around. But it was definitely an intense learning experience, so I was glad to get a little bit of a breath here before we go on the road.
Jared, what are you most looking forward to in December, January, when you start the Globetrotter Tour?
For me, you know, I'm kind of an announcing purist. I've got some guys that I really look up to, and there's a couple dates on that calendar that stand out more than anything I'm looking forward to. We got a show at Madison Square Garden. You know, I think that speaks for itself, America's most famous arena. And the other one for me, being a Seattle guy, is coming back to announce it at the home of the former home of the Supersonics. You know, that's to me, to step in there and places where I grew up listening to some great voices and watching some amazing basketball, that's probably the number one thing right there, is a couple of those dates where it's like, wow, I can't believe I get to set foot, you know, in this place and announce in this place and represent the brand.
Jared, how did you get started in public address announcing and figure out that it was something that you wanted to pursue?
Well, for me, I was hanging around my old high school, came back from school one year, a former player, and they had a basketball game, just came back to see the guys, and they didn't have an announcer this one night. And so the athletic director came up and was saying, look, we just need somebody, just get up there and talk, we don't care if you're good. And so I got up, and I remember sitting behind the mic right before it was go time. And for some reason, the thing that was popping into my head was Michael Buffer, you know, the legendary boxing announcer. And I remember telling myself, you know, I can do this one of two ways. And I remember many times being in games where there was exciting things happening, you know, huge comeback or something like that. And the announcer really didn't seem to do much for the crowd. And I always thought, man, that's your chance to be kind of a sixth man for the home squad there. And so when it was time to go, I just let it rip. I just went nuts. I said, let's get ready to rumble. And I'll never forget, you know, all these faces turning to stare at me like, who is this guy? You know? And I was hooked, you know, immediately said, this is it. I didn't have an opportunity to do it for a little while after that. I moved down to into Oregon, and out of nowhere, the opportunity fell in my lap again. They had a basketball tournament going on at the local high school, and guys said, hey, will you step in and do this? My first paid gig, that was about 2002. And ever since then, in some form or another, I've been doing it just as a hobby. And we're real fortunate down where I'm at in Bend. We've got a lot of ex-professional athletes that are part of some of these organizations. And they would always be coming up and encouraging, man, you're really good. You could do this at the next level. And I kind of thought, well, what does that look like? And so I just kept kind of bumping around, doing every little event I could, every sport I could. And this opportunity came up out of nowhere and just fell in my lap. And next thing I know, you know, I'm off to New York.
Jared Lewis, kind enough to join us here on the Double with the Double S Express. Hey, Jared, you're talking about your time in Bend, Oregon, calling a game, I believe, for the IBL, the International Basketball League. Now, there's three high schools in Bend. There's Bend High, Mountain View High, and then what's the third one?
Third one is Summit High School.
Summit. Okay, and I believe that's where the IBL the teams were playing. Was that correct?
Yes, they did a couple of their seasons there, and they actually tried to bounce around to each of the high schools so they could make it accessible for everybody. You know, Summit's a little bit out of the way from the main part of town, and that kind of gave us a chance. And the other benefit for that, too, was that it gave me a chance to a lot of the other schools and other organizations came out and saw us, and so I'd kind of get these little offers dribbling in after that. And so that led to, you know, doing a lot of high school at various sports, and then the IBL thing just kind of took over. And led to some work with the PGA, and I've been working here with the WCL's Bend Elks for the last 10 years until I got this opportunity. So it's really a great place because it gave me a chance to build the craft without even knowing it. You know, I got a chance to do a variety of sports and try out a variety of things and stumble and fall a lot of times. But it was kind of a safe environment, small town. You know, people aren't too concerned with what the announcer's doing. They just need a warm body. And so I just took it over and did my thing, you know, and it seemed to work out for the best so far.
Yeah, there's no greater place for me than, you know, for those of our listeners who haven't been to Central Oregon, to get out to Bend, Oregon. Of course, that's right on the edge of Mount Bachelor. Of course, Sun River right over there, you know, just at the bottom of the mountain. And, of course, you're at 5,000 feet. Sean Wally, you and I definitely had the chance to call a game there on the radio for the Tacoma Thunder against the Central Oregon Hotshots. But, yeah, just a beautiful, beautiful place out there.
It is. It's paradise, you know, skiing and golfing and just a beautiful, welcoming community. And I love that fact that all three of us here have this IBL connection. I know the commissioner was pretty excited about knowing that we're all still doing it. And, you know, they were really the guys that gave me my start.
Now, Jared, you're mentioning doing PGA stuff out there and – various sports. I mean, are you pretty much the guy out there in Bend? I mean, it sounds like you've got it on lock.
Well, I'll tell you, there's some talented folks out here, and I've been really fortunate to be able to do the things that I do. And the funny thing is, it's kind of a domino effect. You know, every gig that I've had has come from somebody being at a previous event. The PGA work came just because the folks directing the tournament, that's Peter Jacobson Sports, was running that for Jeldwin back during that time. And they just came out to an Elks game just to watch some baseball, looking for something to do. And they heard me and said, hey, would you be interested in coming down to announce on the 18th green? And I didn't really know what I was getting into at the time until I walked on and there's, you know, Fred Funk and Kite and Fuzzy Zeller. And I'm standing right next to him calling their name going, wow, how did I get myself into this? So I think it's just a matter of putting yourself out there and being willing to try and fail. But I've been really lucky. The folks around here have been real supportive and give me a lot of opportunity.
Jared, what's one of the biggest things you've learned over the years in getting on the mic and being in front of the, I guess, the public ear, because they hear you more than they see you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I've gotten lots of great advice. I communicate with a lot of announcers online, and I ask them for, you know, opinions and advice and tips. And I think the biggest thing, you know, that I've learned is a lot of people get up, you know, some people say I have a fear of public speaking, and they kind of go into it with the mindset of it's me against the crowd. And I never thought of it that way. You know, I thought, well, I'm just one of them. I'm just a fan. And I just got to get them on my side, and we're all going to do this together. And so I think the biggest thing is just do you. You know, like I said, that first time I announced, I kind of tried to imitate Michael Buffett. I know he's got a trademark on that. So, but I learned through that time to find my own voice and find my own style. And that by far has been the biggest thing. Just do you. One of my favorite pieces of advice came from David Diamante, who's the voice of the New Jersey Nets. He's got one of the best quotes. He said, just be clear, be concise, and do you. And a lot of people ask, well, how do you do that? How do you? I said, just get up and have fun. Find what works for you and stick with it and try to get a feel for the crowd. You know, is it a busy night? Are they having a good time? How can I get them into what's going on when we're, you know, down by 10 points, we're down by 5 runs and still make it entertaining for the fan?
You know, Sean, I wish you were there in Phoenix with us because, number one, you would have had a great time auditioning as Jared and I did, and you would have been able to hear Jared's awesome audition. And I had Jared top two for sure, and definitely the Globetrotters did as well because look where he's at today. But I wish I could have recorded what he did for his audition because he was very creative and did something that nobody else did. And, you know, he thought it up and he held the O in Globe forever. And all of us are sitting there and we're like a deer in headlights dumbfounded because this guy is about to turn pink and fall over because he's out of breath. And he's holding Globe for, I don't even know. Have you ever timed yourself? It must have been 15, 20 seconds easy.
Yeah, the funny thing is I do practice that stuff. I was one of those kids that was constantly mimicking other people and voices when I was younger. But the funny thing is I watched some tape. I was trying to look up guys that had announced for them before. And one of the guys that has worked with him, Chris Griffin, is a very, very, very talented sportscaster. A little bit different style than me, but he holds the kind of E part of Harlem really long. When they come out, he goes, Harlem, and holds it like that. And I thought, well, I'm down here, what that Mountain View High School that you mentioned is the Cougars. And when I would bring the Cougars out, I would hold that, oh, same thing. A couple times I'd feel the room get light and almost find my head on the table. And so I'm sitting there going into the audition thinking of all these different styles to do, and I came back to just do you. And I knew that O was something that I could hold because I had done it before, so I just let it rip.
Well, man, I wonder why they didn't give you audio of what you guys did. I mean, between you, Jared, Sean, and Chris Peace, another guest here on the double, man, I'm sure that you brought three different styles, but, you know, I'm intrigued to see what you guys were all about.
Well, you know, the good news is there's a lot of dates out there that you'd be able to come out and come hear me. So, and it was very, very unique. You know, they had several different announcers, guys and gals, and all had a unique style doing their own thing. And so, you know, it was a little bit intimidating at first. One of the guys that auditioned, you know, we jokingly kind of called him Barry White because he had this deep, deep baritone. And I got in the van at the airport and said hi to him. He says, hey, how you doing? And I immediately thought, I'm done. There's no way I'm going to beat this guy. I mean, he just sounds like something from another level. But you also don't know what they're looking for going into it. And so, you know, I just did my thing, got back on the plane and said, okay, you know, hopefully I'll get a phone call here. And about a week later, I did.
You know, Jared, one of the things that you had mentioned was, is all in all, just be you. And of course, you know, myself being a PA announcer as well, at some point, you know, no matter how many people you've heard do PA announcing, and this is one of the things that Sean and I talk about, every time I go to a professional sporting event, you know, most of the times the fans are looking out on the field and, you know, watching the players and this, that, and the other. The very first thing that goes on with me when I step into an arena or a stadium is I'm listening to the PA announcer. I'm listening to the way their voice, the way they capture the audience, how the audience gravitates. But above all, when I get that information, I want to make it mine. And that's the key is, you know, even though you're listening to some of the best people, you hone in, you make it yours. And once that product comes out, it's magical. And so I'm sure that, you know, when you guys were down there auditioning for the Globetrotters, again, it was your own individual flavor, even though you have somebody who you go off of as a foundation.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's one of the most, I think, misunderstood. A lot of times I've found when I haven't had to audition a ton. A lot of times people say, hey, will you just come do this? But it's one of those things where when I say I'm an announcing purist, I'm not necessarily looking to get into, you know, sports casting. I really enjoy being in front of the crowd and the mic. And there tends to be a lot of guys that they get at these different levels that are sports casters. And I kind of jokingly say they show up in a suit and tie and scream into the mic like they're part of the morning show, you know, group. And making it your own is the biggest thing because you have to have a unique style. You have to stand out in a way that, as they say, you grab the crowd. One of the best things I ever heard was that a great announcer gets noticed without drawing attention to himself. And I think that's a huge thing if you kind of wrap your brain around it for a second, because when I go to do like a boxing event or something like that, the announcer is the one thing that the audience brands with the entire time during the event. You're talking before the players or the boxer, whatever it is, comes out, and you're talking to them the entire time, and after everyone leaves the court, you're the one saying goodbye. You know, a lot of times when I'm talking to an event promoter, you know, you got to remind them that this is the one thing. It's like the crown jewel on your event. It's not about the announcer, but the announcer is the one that creates the atmosphere for the audience. He's kind of the chief salesman in a lot of ways. And I keep that in mind every time that I step out. You know, it's my job to bridge the gap between the Globetrotters and the audience. They do it in their own way, but, you know, you're kind of that sixth man. You're that voice. And when you make it really unique and make it your own, you know, and you can think of some of those voices that you know. Like you said, the things that I do all have a little piece of the announcers I heard growing up. And you kind of take little lessons and pieces from that, and you make it your own, and that's what helps you have that unique style.
Jared Lewis, public address announcer for the Harlem Globetrotters. Jared, you've got just about 2 months. It seems like it might be a long time, but it'll be here before you know it. Christmas Day, you won't have time to unwrap gifts. You're getting on a jet plane.
That's right. I fly out Christmas morning. I do my first show. We actually, I think, practice that night. And then I'm doing our games the very next day. I think our first game's in Baltimore, and then we're in New York for a good week-long stand. Madison Square Garden, we're doing a couple shows out there, East Rutherford. So it's going to be quick. I think I'll be on a plane for Christmas, but I get to be in Times Square for New Year's Eve, which is a bucket list for a lot of people. So, you know, see the world with a great group of guys, you just can't beat it. And the best part is you're part of an organization who's sole purpose is to go out and bring this exciting brand of basketball, bring families together. You know, people leave Globetrotters games with smiles on their faces, and that's an exciting thing to be a part of.
Jared Lewis, thank you so much for your time tonight. Follow him at Titan of Talk on Twitter.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks so much for having me. I love the show. I'm glad to finally meet the other half of the Double S Express, because I've only ever talked to one half, so I'm glad to finally talk to Sean Boyd here.
Hey, well, it's awesome, man, and best of luck to you. I know you're going to have an exciting time during the holidays, and so keep up the great work, and we look forward to hearing from you down the road.
All right, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you.
And, hey, Jared, if you need someone to carry your bags, I'm available.
Well, hey, we're going to be in Kennewick February 22nd. We'll be up in your neck of the woods, so we're coming through the Northwest, Northern California, so hopefully we'll get a chance to see you.
As a matter of fact, Jared, now, when will you be in the Sacramento area?
You know, I would have to – there's so many dates right now, I'd have to look. But it is, I believe, it's all kind of happening in February in that neck of the woods that we finally get over towards the West Coast and the Northwest. So you can go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com. The schedule's there for all the dates coming up, and you can grab your tickets there.
Well, yeah, we'll definitely be sure to get you in front of one of the ambassadors and former on the double guest, Sterling Forbes. And so he was a Harlem Globetrotter as well, and so it should be fun when you get here in Sacramento as well.
Well, yeah, we look forward to it, guys. I appreciate it.
There goes Jared Lewis from Bend, Oregon, now the man on the mic for the Harlem Globetrotters.
Man, I get excited. I wish we had Don, do we have Sweet Georgia Brown? Is that too late to pull up to go to break? Man, that would be awesome. But if not, that's okay. We are going to take a quick break. And when we return, we are going to have guest number two, Paul Gackle of the Gackle Report. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours.
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Some legends are told, some turn to dust or to gold, but you will remember me.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. Let's go right back out to the holysmokednuts.com phone lines and welcome in Paul Gackle of GackleReport.com. Paul, what's going on?
What was that, Holy Smokes Nuts?
Yeah, man, right. it is the Holy Smoke Nuts hotline. And so one of our,
right, well, I'll be the correspondent with the nuts. That's cool.
There you go. See, I knew Paul, we have you back on here. And ever since the break, you know, we've been joking here. But man, you had mentioned about the Raiders, and we'll get right into it with the Oakland Raiders winning a game. And, of course, we come back from the break with Fallout Boys Centuries. Man, you talk about being remembered. You want to be remembered? Go 0-16.
That's a good way to put yourself in the books. You know, it's not easy. It takes a lot of dedication. You know, actually, it takes at least a decade of dedication from the front office to make sure that you don't get any, you know, workable first-round picks out there on the field. That takes a lot of dedication. But, yeah, they might be able to go on a run for it this year. Definitely the schedule is helping them out. And we talked about this way back in the spring. What a murderous schedule. If they were playing an AFC East schedule, I think that they would pick up a few W's along the way.
Yeah, and of course, you know, they're playing the Cleveland Browns in Cleveland. Of course, Cleveland losing yesterday to the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I mean, when I say lose, I mean they lost it. And so,
that one,
you know,
hurt.
Hopefully the Raiders can go in and take
advantage. They're not so angry that they're just looking to pick up a win this week. Hopefully they are in the kind of tail between the legs phase and the Raiders can, you know, jump on that.
Yeah, because outside of that, it is a gauntlet that the Raiders go through, of course, playing in their division, the AFC West, and then going up against the NFC West, which is, of course, one of the toughest divisions in the NFL.
And then you had teams like the Houston Texans, who maybe early in the season, before the season gets going, you look at that and you go, okay, well, that's maybe a juicy game for us early in the schedule. But the Texans wind up being a pretty half-decent team because, you know, last year was sort of, the stars kind of had to line up for them to be as bad as they were last season. So, yeah, they really just haven't had any breaks whatsoever anywhere on the schedule. You know, you got to feel bad because the kid Derek Carr hasn't been that bad.
Yeah, Paul, and one of the things that you look to, the Raiders have had, it seems like they're making strides. They're getting better. They're close, but they're just not doing enough to get over the hump and get that first win.
Hey, absolutely. Boy, what do you think? Did Dennis Allen get a raw deal?
He did. And you know, I just think that, and this is one of the things that I was talking about earlier as far as, you know, the Raider Nation wanting Reggie McKenzie out and Dennis Allen gets you know, gets fired. I think this was, you know, one of these things that went hand in hand, and it's going to take some time. I mean, for the Raider fans, I mean, if you really thought that things were going to turn around and you're looking at an 8-8 season this year and you know, and then playoffs next year, that was a fallacy. And of course, as a Raider fan, you know, you want that. You want to see your team at least 500. But when you look at the way things have happened, they've done a whole fire sale of all the old free agents that they had, and, you know, the high market, you know, spending money on these players with, you know, and hoping for magic beans. They got rid of all that. Now they're starting from scratch. It's going to be a long time before this team actually starts to see a little bit of success.
Well, isn't the problem that before they underwent this transition, they were 8-8 with Hugh Jackson, and really, and they were playing for a playoff spot on the final week of the season.
Yeah,
and then you bring in McKenzie and Allen, and it's been all downhill since then. And you're telling fans, you know, it's going to be, you know, a half decade before you compete again. And it's hard not to go, hey, we were 8-8 with the last guy.
Yeah, you know, but what the fans fail to realize is that even though with Hugh Jackson, they were at 8-8, the bank was broken. And at some point, there had to be a there had to be a turning point. And what happened was, is Mark Davis said, "Look, we can't continue down this road." He started to get, you know, the information from people such as Reggie McKenzie that, hey, we have to level this out. And right now, we're looking at an ugly, ugly phase in this. It's like you have an address. You tear down the house that was average, and now you're trying to build this beautiful, right, luxurious house. It's going to take some time.
Well, here's my criticism of Reggie McKenzie and what he's done is when I'm completely tearing down the house and I'm building a new house, I am really laying down a really solid, strong foundation first and foremost. If I'm doing anything year one, year two, it's building just a stout offensive line. And that's where I would have focused my draft picks. I don't know that you go with Hayden. I'm still suspect on that pick, the Hayden pick in the first-round pick, because with all the needs that they had, it just seems like cornerback's the last place that I would go, especially with the league being so pass-happy right now. It's like, I mean, even guys, you know, even the best cornerbacks in the league are getting burned right now. So it would have to have been like a Patrick Peterson or, you know, a Richard Sherman type. Yeah, although Sherman was way down in the draft when he went, we didn't know what he was coming out of college. But I didn't like that. I would have gone offense. I think you just have to start with the offensive. When you have nothing, you got to start with the offensive line, start with the defensive line. Look at the Dallas Cowboys. They might be the front runners right now because they went out, what was it, 4 first-round picks on the offensive line right now, and you're starting
right
to see that pay off.
Yeah, and of course, in 2013, which was Reggie McKenzie's first full year in drafting, in that draft, there was only one offensive lineman. That was Menelik Watson from Florida State. And the rest were, you know, of course, you just mentioned DJ Hayden. And then, you know, there was that grasp with Tyler Wilson. And, you know, after that, you know, he lost a lot of the fan base as far as, you know, what are we going to do as far as, you know, solidifying that offensive line, like you were saying.
It just seems like the secondary is a luxury position. That's a place that you go when you have your meat and potatoes kind of squared away. And, I mean, we're just really – we haven't seen much progress on that offensive line at this point. And, you know, that may turn around. But that's just where I would go personally if I'm starting to build the house all over again. But, you know, what do I know? I've never won a Super Bowl.
Paul Gackel joining us here on The Double. And, Paul, you know, with all the stadium issues the Raiders have had and trying to get a new stadium and trying to upgrade and find a way to stay in Oakland, stay in the Bay, would it be an upgrade if they just moved to Candlestick Park? It's vacant.
I personally would rather have them in Oakland because it's easier to get to. But, yes, it would be an upgrade. I mean, at this point, anything's an upgrade. You could, you know, maybe they could go play in the Metrodome. That's vacant, too. That would be an upgrade.
Yeah. Hey, Paul, Sean doesn't know. He hasn't seen what Candlestick looks like now. There are no seats left in there, and they are about ready to implode this thing in a major way.
Yeah, it's getting the TNT any day now. I think that as soon as Sir Paul McCartney stepped off stage with, like, a 41-song set in the final act of Candlestick Park, that place, pretty much they started tearing it up, and it's going to be gone soon.
Now, Paul, the team that used to play there now in Santa Clara, the 49ers, which team are they really? Are they the team that dismantled Dallas early on, the team that's won half their games, or the team we saw yesterday that got beat up by the Broncos?
I feel like I don't know who anybody in this league is anymore at this point. But I would say that, you know, yesterday you gotta take into consideration that they were out without Patrick Willis, and that's already being without Navarro Bowman, without Alden Smith. They were missing Chris Culver and Jimmy Ward in the secondary, and they were down to three corners when Chris Cook left the game with a hamstring, Parrish Cox, Tremaine Brock, and Dante Johnson. So when you only have three corners that you can send out on the field, that's trouble. And then you had Mike Iupati missing on the offensive line. Now they're losing Kilgore, their center. They let Jonathan Goodwin walk, and he broke his left ankle. He's going to be out for the year. So you're going to have a third-round pick, Marcus Martin from USC, starting at center when they come back off the bye against the Rams on November 2nd. So they have – it's just a mess over there, and it's just so many injuries just stacking up. And it's just the 49ers aren't who they are anymore. I mean, you're talking about what made the 49ers so great when they were going to NFC Championship games and, you know, one play away from winning the Super Bowl. Well, they had, like, four just top-line linebackers. Well, three of them were gone yesterday. And the other thing is they were the Dallas Cowboys before, where they just had this big bully on the offensive line, and they could go push people around, and they were a run-first team, and they were the best run team in the NFL. With all these injuries on the line, they can't exert their will up front anymore. They can't get the 5-6 yards on first down anymore. So what you saw yesterday is already in the second quarter, they're going with an empty backfield and a five-receiver set. So they're going to get guys back. They're going to get, you know, Alden Smith could potentially be back after the bye. I don't know what we can expect from if Navarro Bowman's going to come back, and if he does, what we can expect from him. So I don't know that this team this year is ever going to be, in terms of the defense and in terms of the offensive line, what they were and what they need to be a true Super Bowl contender.
Now, Paul, one of the things you'd mentioned is Alden Smith possibly coming back with a lesser suspension. And, you know, some of the other players that will be coming back, such as Bowman, from the injuries. And, you know, I tend to see things getting better for the San Francisco 49ers with that, you know, with that being said. There's been a lot of locker room issues that have been going on with the San Francisco 49ers, but yet they still see themselves in a position at 4-3 to make a run in the middle of the season. Now, between the 49ers and the Seahawks, which do you see, you know, coming out with on the better end of the stick?
Geez, that's a great question. You know, yeah, the 49ers, you know, I agree with you. That's sort of the song that I've been singing all year long is, okay, you know, get through this rough patch early on. You're going to get Bowman back. You're going to get Alden Smith back. Eventually, the offensive line is going to tune up because earlier they were missing Anthony Davis. There was the Alex Boone holdout, and it seemed like that situation was going to get shored up. I'm really concerned about losing your starting center, who is your backup center from last season, and going with a rookie there. I just don't know if the offensive line ever takes its form in that situation. I think they can get a lot better on the defensive side of the ball with some of the people coming back. I don't think Bowman can be, you know, tip-top shape coming off an ACL and just stepping on the field, so I wouldn't expect that. So I guess I'm still going to go with the Seahawks, but the Seahawks are just absolutely, I'm just vexed by them right now. So that's a really tough question. If I have to throw the money down, which you guys made me do last year before the start of the season, I picked the Seahawks, and I believe they won the Super Bowl, so I'll stick with the Seahawks again and play the home crowd a little bit.
There you go.
You know, I was a big Hulk Hogan fan growing up. I know how that works.
Now, Paul, with that being said and talking about the Seattle Seahawks, of course, there are some things going on there with Percy Harvin now becoming a New York Jet. And there's talks in the locker room right now as well with the Seahawks as far as, you know, a 50-50 split on, you know, hey, maybe he should have stayed or maybe he should have gone. Is this a precursor of something that the Seahawks will go through, and can they overcome the adversities just as the 49ers look like they're kind of weathering right now.
Yeah, well, I do think that, you know, if anybody can band the guys together to overcome the adversity and make a charge, it's Pete Carroll. I mean, that's what he does. He's really, you know, he's a really good players coach. And it seems like wherever he's been, well, except for, you know, the early days and with the Jets and whatnot, his first run in the NFL, but recently he's been able to get the guys behind him to rally together. But I was wondering, is that what you're seeing about what happened yesterday? Was it that half the team had just the wind taken out of their sails and they didn't come out and compete?
Well, yeah, sure. I would say that it definitely took them a while to, I guess, shake the cobwebs off and realize that, okay, we're in a dogfight and we need to show up and play. And they definitely seemed a bit lethargic, sluggish, and not all on the field. So, you know, it did have an effect on them. It's not an excuse the team uses, but, I mean, the players did say, well, of course, it's kind of hard not to, you know. This happens
and
on...
Especially happening so late in the week, like Friday, I think is when it went down, right? So, I mean, maybe if that happens on Monday or Tuesday, you have a few days to gather yourself and the team kind of, they go into their practice week sort of, you know, knowing that he's not going to be there and everybody sort of rallies around that point. But it happened so late in the week, they had to have just taken the whole team off guard. And by the time it even sets in, now you have to go out and play the game.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was right when the team was loading up on the buses to go to the airport, and all of a sudden there's no Percy, and oh, by the way, he's now a New York Jet. Word is that Marshawn Lynch almost got off the bus, and he kind of had his own little fit about it and considered not even going to St. Louis in protest, but he thought better of it, and he did get on that plane, and he's still a Seahawk, because I'm sure if he did not go, he may not be a Seattle Seahawk right now.
Well, I think that little anecdote right there tells you all you need to know about that situation, because Marshawn Lynch is one of the catalysts of this team and, you know, the heart and soul in a sense. I mean, if he's that upset, you got to imagine that just the trade just sends shockwaves through that locker room. But I think that they can pick it up, and I think that they can get it together. But just losing that chess piece, Percy Harvin, in terms of what he meant, almost as much for the running game, you know, even if it's just a decoy, it seems like that will really hurt them out there. The Arizona Cardinals are starting to look like they're in a nice position come playoff time. It's going to be really interesting to see who comes out of the NFC, but I think, you know, the problem for both the Seahawks and the 49ers, if they aren't able to get going and get that division title, is that I think it's just so hard in the NFC to go out there as a wild card team and get to the Super Bowl. Winning three games on the road in that conference is really, really tough, because that means you're probably having to go to a Green Bay or a Detroit, probably have to go to Dallas and maybe even Arizona. And that just seems like a tumultuous task.
Paul, now one of the things, you know, in this whole scenario with, you know, the Seahawks and the 49ers is all offseason. And, of course, you know, the NFC Championship was considered the Super Bowl last year. And then all offseason, both teams are kind of beefing up their teams a little bit and putting themselves into position, for one, for the Seahawks to get themselves back to the Super Bowl, and the other for the 49ers to get back to the Super Bowl as well. It just seems like both teams set themselves up to battle each other without even thinking about the other two teams in the NFC West. And what's happened is both teams are so angry and there's so much dissension within each other that they're allowing the Arizona Cardinals to just walk away quietly and steal this thing.
At this point, yes, it certainly is looking that way, although the Cardinals still do have to come out here to Levi's Stadium. And I believe they still have to – they have two with the Seahawks still. Is that right?
Yeah. Two games with Seattle.
That could be three losses right there. And then all of a sudden, it's the deck's even again. So, you know, you got those head-to-head games are going to be huge.
Yeah, it's going to be huge to see if the 49ers can get themselves back to where they need to after the bye. Of course, Seattle's going to have to tough this one out as far as, you know, keeping things moving. I know Pete Carroll's done a great job as far as, you know, the exterior, the damage control. I just happen to know, you know, with some of the reports that we're reading, you know, from some of the prominent media is that there are three sides of this story internally. And, you know, it's just going to have to play itself out. You have what I had mentioned before, the 50-50 locker room split with Seattle. There's Pete Carroll saying that he's done everything as far as talking to his players. And then there's that part where Marshawn Lynch didn't even know what was going on, you know, with the trade. And so somebody's not telling the truth. And somewhere in between lies the truth. And I think that that's going to materialize, you know, as the weeks go on.
Who could have envisioned this just a month ago? I mean, Seattle, they you know, open up after, you know, the Super Bowl banner comes down. They just wipe the clock with the Green Bay Packers, and they're looking very much like the first, you know, the team that has a good chance to be the first team, you know, what, over a decade to repeat. And, man, boy, do those wheels come off fast. And now we're talking about locker room splits and is a coach lying and, you know, players not wanting to get on the bus. I mean, that, wow, how does that happen so fast?
Yeah, well, on both, you know, with both teams, I mean, again, we're talking about Seattle and San Francisco, arguably the top two teams in the NFL coming in the offseason, with the exception of the Denver Broncos. And with both teams, you're hearing about, you know, coaches. I mean, let's not forget Jim Harbaugh. You know, he had a, you know, a problem with his locker room, and it sounds like he still does. And so, you know, all these things.
He's not coming back.
Yeah, well, there's a strong chance.
That's shocking. I don't know, you know.
Yeah, how could that be? It's just amazing.
As the world turns, they say.
Paul Gackle, thank you so much for your time once again tonight. Visit him at GackleReport.com. Follow him on Twitter at GackleReport. Paul, your insight is awesome. Thank you so much.
Always Thanks, a Paul. Blast, guys. Let's do it again soon. Obviously, we have a lot of football to play still.
Yes.
Hey, I'll have to get your address off air and send you some of those holy smokes nuts.
I've already got them.
Paul Gackle, there he goes. Find him on Twitter at Gackle Report. Read his articles. Listen to his podcast, GackleReport.com.
Boy, you know, again, there are some – man, I'm excited about – the NFC West and how this is going to pan out. And, you know, again, I have the suspicion that the Arizona Cardinals are definitely taking advantage of a situation here to where there's a huge brawl between two teams that haven't even met this year yet. And, you know, when the smoke clears, you know, the Arizona Cardinals could be, man, two, maybe three games up. Can you imagine that? The Arizona Cardinals, two, three games up after about 10 weeks of football. That would be amazing.
Well, Sean, they're already two games up on the Seahawks right now. So the lead can't get much bigger, or it's going to be too tough a hill to climb for either the Seahawks or the 49ers.
And can you imagine this? Of course, the Denver Broncos beating the daylights out of the San Francisco 49ers, and the 49ers at 4-3. The Seahawks are at 500, and dare I say, take a word from Richard Sherman, mediocre right now. But if that a coin flip, and what I mean by that, the Denver Bronco game, which went into overtime, a coin flip could have had the Seahawks at 2-4. That's some reality for you right there.
Well, 3-3 isn't all that much better.
So if I were to say to you, man, because I know at the beginning of the year, we were kind of laughing at the fact that people say after a team wins the Super Bowl, the odds of them getting back to the playoffs is a dismal. And we kind of thumbed our nose at it. But right now, you know, it's looking like it could be a possibility if Seattle can't turn things around.
Well, adversity can do one of two things. It can make you stronger, or you can crumble underneath it. And with Pete Carroll's leadership and Russell Wilson on your side, I've got to believe that they can learn from it, grow from it, and hopefully get stronger from it. And I'd much rather have adversity in October than December or January.
Yeah, you know, and that's you hit a valid point. You know, get this stuff out of the way, you know, so that, you know, you can work the kinks out. And for the 49ers, of course, a bye can't come at a better time, you know, when they're licking their wounds with injuries. Seattle's just going to have to battle this one. Of course, they've gotten what is considered the cancer out of the locker room. And so, you know, Doug Baldwin definitely benefited from that. And, of course, you know, Russell Wilson had a great game as well. So, you know, even with that being said, they still came up with the loss. So I believe that the defensive side can be fixed. But it looked like the offense was doing a pretty good job yesterday once they got things rolling.
Yeah, that's something we should definitely touch on real quick before we get on out of here. And that is Russell Wilson's day set an all-time record. No quarterback has ever thrown for over 300 yards and ran over 100. He did that yesterday in St. Louis.
And when you think about that, you think of a quarterback throwing for 300 and running for 100, what would be the statistic that they would lose the game? Now, that's another statistic to look at, because, I mean, if you were to say that he was to do that and they lost, I would say you've got to be kidding me. Because, for one, it's not Russell Wilson like to throw for 300, but to throw for 300 yards and get 100 yards rushing and to come out with a loss, that just doesn't add up.
Special teams, special teams, special teams.
What an awesome play that was, the punt, man. I thought that was just an incredible play. They must have seen, you know, tons of video on the Seahawks' tendencies and how they just flow to the ball. And what a setup, man. That was probably one of the better plays that I've seen, the punt return run back for, what was it, 98 yards? 97-yard punt return?
90.
Man, I know it wasn't good for you, but it was kind of fun to see, you know, something like that materialize.
Well, it's ridiculous. You know, everybody's supposed to know what side the ball's being kicked to. The snapper, the punter, and the gunner on the left side were the only ones there to try and stop the returner. Everybody else went right. Made no sense at all.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you're a heat-seeking football team like the Seahawks, everybody flies to where they think the ball is going. And, they must have saw that tendency in Seattle to actually pull that one off. But I'm sure the Seahawks will definitely fix that moving forward, and we won't see that happen again. Well, Mr. Wally, show number 75, Diamond 75, is in the books. I'd like to thank our guests for being on today, Jared Lewis, Harlem Globetrotters PA announcer. And, of course, he's going to be ready to go on the road here in December for the holidays, so that's exciting for him. And then, of course, Paul Gackle with the Gackle Report as our second guest, bringing us all things Bay Area and catching us up to speed on what's going on. And we didn't get a chance to talk about those San Francisco Giants starting a game one tomorrow, but we'll definitely talk about that coming up next week. So that's it. Show number 75 in the books. For Sean Wally, Don Newsom, the engineer, I'm Sean Boyd. You've been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.